Well, hey, Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. You know what? I don't normally say this, but this is like episode, I even have it in the title and I forgot, like 182 or something like that, which is insane to think about, man.
How long
we've been doing this. Like, yeah. I know you weren't on like the first couple episodes, but I'm pretty sure it was quickly after that.
I mean, dude, you've been Captain Consistency ever since. Like, it's
I know it is pretty crazy. But and of course, if you guys don't know who I'm talking about, if you're actually listening to a podcast and not watching this, it's Steven of Midnight Hatter.
Cheers. How are you all doing?
And which it was pretty cool. Again, I always like to shout out because this is the sequel every week. This right. show is the sequel to Midnight Hatter show. Where, you know, really, if you're really more into like the Gumpless side of things, that's where you got to hang out because we had a guest yesterday. Nickel Models. I forgot.
Nickel Models on Instagram. Okay. I'm pretty sure if you guys are following either Adam or I on Instagram, you're probably following Nickel Models too, because that's true.
And it was really cool because this was the first time I really got to hear, you know, like a judge talking kind of about the specifics of what they're looking at. Because I remember when we were talking about GBWC for a while, because on your show, we did a few talking about, like, because you went to the one in Virginia and everything. And like, I'm always thinking like, man, that's so hard to like to judge, like in my mind, because it's more of like an art thing. But the thing he said that's really stuck with me was that, like, yeah, these things could be completely different concepts, but I'm looking at these core basic things, and that's like the nub marks,
the fundamentals.
The fundamentals. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a really good way at the end of the day to be like, okay, not only were they this crazy creative, but they took the time to get those fundamentals down. Because that's something I learned with drumming really well. When it came to drumming, it doesn't matter how fast I could be, it's better that I got the technique down. Because when I got technique down drumming, then I could drum faster with less energy.
Yeah. It was really cool. I'm glad you brought up drumming, because did you ever see that movie Drumline with Nick Cannon?
No.
Perfect example of what I think Nickel Models is getting at, what Nick's getting at with that, like drilling on the fundamentals is. So it's a movie about a high school drummer that, you know, gets into this prestigious school, but can't read music, and he memorizes everything so that his performance is on point. He's creative, he's talented, he can drum faster than anybody else on the line, but he can't read music. So if they were to give him a solo, he'd have to like take it home and memorize it by listening to it. And so again, you know, you're only as good as your ability to execute the most basic things. And so if everyone else in the room can read music and you're sitting there and it's like, oh, but I'm really talented, it's like, well, talent's only going to get you so far. And the ideas that you put forth are only going to get you so far.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. It comes to music. Like, I've written music, recorded music with my brother, but I don't know how to read music. So, and remember, you know, like I have in some of my videos, I have that like Zeta backbeat going on with the bass. And I've shown you the version I made with the harmonies, but you could hear that I can't, or the melody, I can't really match it, because it's like, well, I know where it's at, but since you're programming it in, you know, I'm using FL Studio, it's like, okay, I don't know what key, or, you know, it's like, I don't know
what
how to
key even mean. Like,
So when it comes to like beats and stuff like that, I can assemble that. But when I'm trying to get that melody, tough. And with Gumpla, I mean, I've learned there's a lot of little technique with that too. You know, sometimes where something might seem so hard because maybe you are over preparing for it when it's more, you know, technique and, even making a mess and cleaning up, taking the time to clean up, you know?
Exactly. I mean, I think that I rushed my Bawu build. And so, funny story, I didn't bring this up, but, you know, Nick actually judged in the competition that I entered. And so, you know, and so it's very, I'm really glad that we got to have that conversation last night, because it's like, wow, it doesn't matter how creative my execution was, doesn't matter like the magnets, hard points, the LEDs that I put in, none of that stuff mattered, because I didn't clear off the seam lines. I didn't finish like certain things. The weathering was, like he said, you know, is it just everything's dirty, or did you weather it intentionally, like top to bottom, or, you know, so
Yeah, like a story with it. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
yeah, that really cool stuff. So, if you guys haven't, if you guys didn't listen to it yesterday, do check it out. And there's even links in that video where you can follow Nickel Models and everything he's associated with. So that was a really good time. Yeah. So I want to talk about Evangelion for a second, a little bit more. Okay. Because I think it's been like this continuation on the show where I've been watching this series. I'm on episode 10. And again, I don't rush through things.
I'm glad.
It's been like 3 weeks or so. There are some episodes that remind me why anime can be so dumb. Because it's like 1 minute, it's like this very existential life or death, awesome designed thing going on. Characters are having to figure it out. And then the next moment, they're like in high school doing lewd things with girls and like saying goofy, like if you think Double Zeta is bad. No. Double Zeta is nothing compared to the goofiness that can happen in Evangelion.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that then reinforced what I understand about anime. And it, I feel like there is something, a reverence for characters. They, you know, a Japanese creator creates a character, but to them it's more than what the action is they take in on screen or in the animation. They like to get into their lives, involved into their lives and how they would interact with certain things. Now, I don't know if that's just a more of a story device, writing device you can use to hook viewers a little bit deeper, or that is really these Japanese creators that are really like, they like, sometimes when I hear Tomino talk about his thoughts about characters, it's like, man, he was really thinking about stuff that had nothing, that has nothing to do with the plot, you know.
And one of the things that I think, because we'll have debates all the time about like, oh, this character is so whiny and this character is annoying and this character is that. And, you know, like you mentioned, like, oh, you know, what are these characters doing? Like talking about lewd things in high school and stuff like that. And I think there's a sort of authenticity and an honesty about a lot of anime creators is that they do portray characters in a way that's more realistic compared to what we would idealize them. Like, yes, we all would love for our teenage sons to be like, no, mother, I'm going to defend the Zeon colonies from invasion. It's like, no, typically a teenager is going to be talking about girls and like saying inappropriate things. And yes, they're going to be whiny sometimes. It's like, these are very realistic portrayals. And yeah, it does come off as goofy, but I think it's, what's the word I'm looking for? Is
genuine.
Sincere. I
know what you mean. And that's something that it's almost like you might be conditioned of how to take in stories, especially maybe in the West through cartoons growing up, where it wasn't, at least for me, it, like watching the real Ghostbusters. It's not like, it's not like there was ever this like real, like incredible backstory, unless I missed it, between like the characters, you know, it was almost like the ghost of the week. And so Ninja Turtles the same way. It's like you just sort of get some basic stuff that's not like off the beaten path and then different tone. It's like by the numbers, we got to get this out, sell the toys. But yeah, the storytelling in Japan.
Yeah, really, and it goes back to like the conversation you and I always have about, you know, giving kids a story worth enjoying. I think that there's a Western mindset where it's like, oh, well, this story is just for kids. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. Like, we don't have to engage with any kind of complex themes or, you know, adult topics or issues. Yeah. Whereas, you know, obviously in anime, it's geared at almost like high school and college age.
Yeah. It's like the people writing it.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. No, it's really cool. So I what I'll say is, at least for now, I'll be interested in finishing Evangelion, but it I think it steers too far into the abstract in terms of tonally. Like, Gundam has a consistent tone all the time. Double Zeta is where it kind of blurs that line a little bit with the, and but that's like a lot of what Evangelion is. But I wanted to go back because I wanted to complete my thought. And I told you about this in DM, you and Ultronimus earlier. But Shin Godzilla and Evangelion has the same music. That's why I was saying that Shin Godzilla is just an Evangelion movie. And I forgot to bring it up because what happens is when like there's a disaster striking and something has to happen, the way he frames it is here's a shot of a building, name of the building. Here's a shot of the person, name of the person. Here's a, and like it will, and then it starts playing like this drum, like but both Shin Godzilla and Evangelion have the exact same music. And then even further, I haven't got this far in Evangelion, but people on YouTube were showing scenes from Shin Godzilla and Evangelion that are frame by frame the same thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like it's instead of just like that alien, it was Godzilla doing whatever the thing was. And or even people, scenes of people. So, okay, and so the reason I love this is because then Hideaki Anno?
Yeah.
Okay. He then comes off more of that auteur that I love about creators when there's all these IPs they're working with. Maybe it's their own, but you can see their fingerprint, you know? And so
what you're saying is you can't wait until G-Quacks comes out and you get to see the boom, boom, boom.
Exactly. Boom, that would be that. So I'm very curious to see what they're going to go for, because it could end up. Here's the thing. Under his company, we have a chance of getting a Gundam that doesn't seem like another typical anime. And I hope that doesn't sound bad compared to like when you look at his works, he's not fitting a mold. Yeah, maybe in some little cultural things, like again, characterization. But when it comes to how he's setting scenes, how plot develops, he has this certain design element to it that I hope I see in G-Quacks. And I hope it's not just like, well, here's just anime fodder with Gundam.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if you saw that, you know, that model kit, the G-Quacks model kit, I'm waiting for mine to ship. I already have it pre-ordered and it released already. Some people have it, and on the sticker sheet there is the Zeon emblem.
I saw that Art Rovo Gundam is going to have a few in stock here soon.
Wow. I'm glad you brought up Art Rovo Gundam. Both of the banners below are related to Art Rovo Gundam right now. How crazy.
Nice.
Oh, now Blue Gamer. Yeah, check that out.
YouTube. It's like, no, but
where'd you see this? Because I haven't been on.
He posted over on Instagram that, that there were a couple of the G-Quack suits on back order. And so they were at the warehouse. They're just waiting for them to clear and they're going to get shipped. So those are going to be in stock over at Art Rovo. Because he's not doing pre-orders, obviously it's first come, first serve. So there's a limited quantity if you're interested in those kits.
Yeah, guys, head over there then. And when did you say it's going to be available? Is it right now? Or
No, probably going to be at least a week, would imagine.
So bookmark Art Rovo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Buy that and then buy like the chrome pens or what, the markers, and then just use the promo code to get free shipping, because it's like two items or more. But like whenever I pick up a kit, I just get markers because
you really always kind of need them. Like it's,
yes, and they run out fast.
They do,
because I use them a lot. Okay, so yeah, moving on from the Evangelion, because then I usually like to get into like what else we've been up to this week. Is there anything that you've been doing Gundam related this week, or even
anything you've been doing? This is so rude the way you know.
Anything you've been doing?
Yeah, what are you up to anyway? Well, so I probably shared this that I built this. It's a high grade, a desert type Zaku. It's the Origin version. This is actually, you know, don't listen Bandai, but this is a bootleg version of the model kit. I did do some interesting customizations, and I'm going to make a tutorial video because I did something very cool with this. So you guys are, you know, live sneak peek at what I'm doing here. I ended up having to make copies of the energy pipes on the Zaku, and the particular blend of resin and alcohol ink that I used resulted in a, what term can I use? Pliable, floppy type of energy pipe, which if you're familiar with like the HG Revive Zaku, the Char Zaku, you know how it comes with that extra sort of rubbery type skirt in case you want that extra poseability. I've managed to make these pipes soft so that they have that same pliability.
Wow. And so this wasn't an accident.
It was an accident, but now I'm going to make a video out of it because it's like, well, I hope that other people can benefit from being able to
make that type of material.
The reason I did it is because the energy pipes that come on this one are designed for the Canon backpack, but I wanted to make it just a standard Zaku, so I stole the backpack from
the Char.
Again, You know, the Char Zaku's, the Char Origin Zaku's come with so many extra parts, like extra shoulders, extra legs, extra backpacks. Like you can almost create an entirely second Zaku if you had the frame.
That's always
fun. So I was able to do that essentially with this, but the one thing that was missing was the correct energy pipes. So I made a resin copy of them and I accidentally made them floppy. So
that is really cool. Like I was asking what you got into, and that's actually pretty badass. You just made up your own material for 3D printing part. Oh my God. Yeah. Anyway, do you think that's going to be a video?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sick. Okay. Well, speaking of building, I started this on a and Art Robo Gundam actually. I started this on a stream and I finished it recently. The Zuda.
Oh yes.
I'll do a review of this because it's interesting how old this is, yet it does some neat things that I wish they still did. You know, one thing I like in particular is, you know, doing the storage. You've got, you know, the heat hawk on the leg. You've got the Sturmfaust on the shield. It's just very interesting too, just because of the design, even though it looks, you know, Zionic. I think this was built by like Zimad, I think more specifically. The building it felt so much different than a typical Zeon suit. So this is a fun build. One interesting thing that happened was it has a commander antenna.
Yeah.
And during my build, before I even completed it, I just put everything in the box and put the box up. That's how I do it all the time. When I came back, it's the commander antenna split off, and I can't believe it. But I don't know. I guess it's nowadays. I'm like, I can fix this.
Yeah,
you know, I did. I mean, I still have to maybe do some work to like sand it a bit. But you can't really tell. And you know what helped? I have one of these things, and it has these two arms. And so I lined it up exactly where I needed them to be, and then I put the glue there.
Perfect.
I love it. I mean, that might be an old secret that everyone knows, but like, I love that, you know, in a pinch, I was able to fix something and not worry about it.
You know? And it's so perfect that you and I, you know, I did an Origin Zaku and you did a Zuda because, as it turns out, last year, Ricky Hoskins, the build that he won the local competition with was that Zuda with the Origin Zaku legs, because he was like, I don't like how skinny the legs are on the Zuda. He was like, I want something like big and Zionic. And so boom, that's a
great idea. I'll have to look that up later because these legs, I was thinking that when I was building them, but
kind of scrawny, right?
Yeah.
Leg day.
And then real quick, some other things I was building. Let's see, where is it? One thing I think you will love and one thing I think you will hate, okay? Because I know you. Shin Matsunaga Zaku.
That is pretty sweet.
I know.
A little ensemble action.
Right? It's that mobile suit ensemble. And I just love, I love these things. Even backpack. And what's neat is a piece fell off. The legs, the bottom, it's hard to see on here, are like five different little pieces you're putting together. It's like a Lego.
Wow.
But I have to glue them. And I did this with this next one, which you're going to hate. This is the heavy gun from Late UC. and it's neat because it has like the thrusters on the legs, but I had to glue those in. I don't normally glue stuff in, but I'm going to have to do that.
Sometimes you do with some of these kits. I love that ensemble, like the proportions. We talk about it almost every week. Yeah. I feel like at this point, it's like, it's just the ensemble scale and proportions are just awesome.
It just works. It's not too SD. Like even this GP01 FB, it just works. It's funny because I was talking to my son earlier and I was like, yo, roast my setup, you know, like my desk. He's like, you have too many robots on your desk. I was like, okay. And I do actually, because I like to keep things here on the side that I'm going to be doing videos on. And then I'm like, is this eight videos just sitting here? And it's like, I could actually,
potentially.
It's like, I could put them up and then work on that later. But, and speaking of videos, so if you guys didn't see, I have that video up of the Gundam Universe Zaku 2 unidentified type. So it's Leighton Requiem for Vengeance, the one that's all kit bashed. I have a review of it up, and it's also a giveaway video. So I pre-ordered two, one from AmiAmi, one from Hobby League in Japan, and they happened to get delivered the same truck.
That's hilarious.
The same day. I thought that was awesome. And I guess I reserved, I guess I pre-ordered both because I might have forgot I did on one, you know, after getting charged. I'm like, oh, well, here we go.
oh, well. And,
but no, so then there's one to give away. So all you got to do is comment on the video. As long as you're a subscriber, you'll be entered in about maybe a week or so. I'll do a drawing. But it's just interesting, and I talked about this in the video, how when you bend the knee, the piping stresses, like they didn't count for the articulation, even though I think they tried because it's plugged into something. And it's like, dang.
That's why you got to make it.
There you go. I'll just make some of those. But I will say, and I say this in the video, that's what's so weird. It's very conflicting because it's like such a well-designed action figure for the Gundam Universe line. Like to me, that's more of a premium figure than even a Marvel Legends in terms of sculpt, engineering. You know, it's.
I had a little bit of an issue with like the color separation on it. Like, you know, I saw that the netting on the shoulder was molded, but it wasn't painted. And so, I mean, it's not a huge deal breaker. Like, you could literally just take a marker and go over the top of it, and it would do exactly what it's supposed to look like. But
no, I get it. Like, that is, and it's interesting because that's something I've done in the past. Like, I have a RX-78-2 from the Gundam Universe that I detailed all that. And it's like, sometimes I will like to do that with these figures just to really give it, just because nowadays, and this is what a lot of it is we're getting figures now that are direct from the source. It's the 3D file. No one has to sculpt anything by hand, whether that's good or bad. Maybe the original was sculpt by hand. So it's not like the guy making the figure. Even with the Godzilla figures, when I was reading something online, like, oh, they have the files for like the MonsterVerse in minus one, but there was no 3D files for the older movies. So everything they hire sculptors for that.
Right.
It's pretty neat. Yeah.
And there's some, like, I mean, if you look at some of the old school guys, like Robert Talone, there's another, I forget his name, but he was the guy that designed the 80s Ninja Turtles action figures. So he actually sculpted them in his own special blend of wax, which he actually gives you the recipe for the wax if you're interested in like becoming an action figure sculptor. But you, like, to your point, you know, everyone's doing everything in 3D now, and then it removes that tactile aspect. But he used to sculpt everything in wax and then cast the parts in resin, and then that's how they would make the master molds for the action figure parts. And it's such a fascinating process that, like,
yeah, I love that stuff. And it's just crazy to think how, it used to be all by hand and now it's computers, which is kind of cool, kind of sad, but it's like AI. There's still the human element the whole time, even if you don't think it's there.
And dude, I tell people all the time, this came up on Discord the other day, is like, oh, you know, I could, you know, scratch build this part, but I think I'm just going to 3D print it. And I was like, I didn't appreciate the way that they said, I'm just going to 3D print it, because I think that it's a very dismissive way of looking at 3D printing. One of the things that I've learned in the last 3 years getting really into 3D printing is that it's not just taking a file and running with it. Like, there's so much prep work and things that need to be done in order to make that file workable, in order to make the file actually 3D printable. And a perfect example would be like, if you were to get your hands on the high res character models of like the Sonic and Shadow from the new movie, you would still have to probably hand sculpt their fur, because that stuff is not on the model. Those are all like modifiers and particle effects that are applied to the model. So it's like, if you were to get the base model, it'd just be like a smooth, you know, you'd still have the shape and the character would look good. But if you wanted it to like look furry and like look realistic the way it does in the movie, you're talking about having to, you know, do a lot of post-processing.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's interesting, because speaking of AI, before we get to our main topic, another thing that I got this week is this Godzilla, the Heisei era. So it's eight discs, and it's from 84 to 95. So it's all those movies. It does the cool thing where, like, the Japanese version of the first movie, there's a Japanese version, the English version or American version, where they cut in scenes of American actors and change some of the story. And then there's this combined version where they took both of the movies and made one big super cut of them.
It's kind of cool. So
Yeah, but what's interesting is this is from Poland, and it does say on the back that they got license from Toho to make these, but only for in Europe.
Interesting.
So, but they did the, so they're 4K. They did the transfers themselves. It wasn't Toho. So I think that's probably what the deal was. Like, maybe they just pay Toho for a license, but the license is very minimal. Where they're like, yeah, we're not going to give you any support or anything. Just we'll approve or whatever. Does that sound familiar to you? Is that a thing where?
I mean, it's not surprising to me that they wouldn't want to invest in like, look, we
have a worldwide release,
right? Like, we don't want to release this in Europe. You know, we don't want to have to, you know, take on that, that production cost. But if you want to do it, you know, pay us and we'll let you, you know, we'll make you like the sub-licensee, which actually, come to think of it, that that's a relationship that was very similar to one that was at my old company, where it's like they had a contract with a company in Australia that made golf products, and we were the sole distributor in the United States, but like we had control over, you know, branding certain aspects of the products. And so it was like, it's very similar to what you're describing, where it's like, you know, we could make some modifications and things, but like,
but did they still have to approve?
Yeah. And then we would have to pay out the licensing fee to them. So,
yeah, and it's interesting because, like, I guess one of these movies is getting a 4K release in May. It's Godzilla vs. Biollante, but none of them have that. In fact, it's more of some of the Blu-rays and DVDs are, like, hundreds of dollars anyway. And I already got the Godzilla PS4 game. I'm not spending any more large amounts of money on anything else. And
you say that.
Yeah. No, but what's interesting is, because going back to the AI upscaling, they use AI upscaling for the 4K. Mm. And it's interesting because it's like, I look at it, I'm like, oh, look at this. But it's not all the time. But then most of the time, it actually looks incredible. And it's like, you know what? I think I don't care that it does the AI upscaling. Because, you know, we heard recently James Cameron did this with Aliens and Terminator. I hadn't watched it. It was mainly to remove film grain. I think that's the point of the AI upscaling more than anything else. But there are some scenes that look super HD. I'm playing on a 4K TV, so you would think, but for like the first film's in 84, it looks amazing. Then I was watching clips of the other ones because I already ripped them all, you know, with my drive to put them on the media server. It looked absolutely amazing. And yeah, I think it's really cool. Like I like that I was able to go on eBay, buy from this Polish, they're called Mantis Video.
And, very cool, man.
Yeah. Pretty cool. But
I, you know, because I use Handbrake when I am taking like Blu-ray footage for Gundam videos, and then I've upscaled it to 4K as well. It's easier with anime when you're working in flat colors, because when you're sampling, like when you're doing like bilinear sampling, if there's only like one, it's like a clear separation. This is green. There is a black line that separates it from a blue.
It can
more accurately predict that. But when you're working with like film and, you know, organic colors and the amount of tone variation in someone's skin, all of a sudden the way that the AI, the algorithm would be sampling colors, that's when you start to get into, you know, what's the example? Where it's like, okay, if you have a blue pixel here and you have a red pixel here, and then you separate them to upscale it and add a pixel in the middle, what color is that pixel? Is it blue? Is it red? Or is it purple?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Because if it's purple, then technically it's adding information that wasn't there before. And that's where artifacting is like
interesting. Yeah, because it's a lot of times it happens in the depth of field scenes. I was telling you, like if it's supposed to be blurry, something will, like maybe even a crease on. I noticed that too. One of the actors, the crease on their cheek was like a straight solid line because the AI, you know,
doesn't know what a face looks like.
But I, again, at the end of the day, what I love about it and the reason I love these movies is because, you know, in the 90s, I didn't know these came out. But they are of my generation, and they use special effects the way I love. It's models, like tons of models, and then people into like physical the stuff. So
that's so. If you're
a fan of filmmaking, that era of Gundam, Godzilla is awesome. You can't wait for the era of Gundam in films. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to move on. It is 7:30 where I am. So 30th anniversary of Wing. I don't know.
Man, we are old.
Well, okay, so that's interesting because it's 30th anniversary of Wing, but really it didn't come to the U.S. until, I think you were telling me, 99 or 2000. Actually, this is somewhere I should be preparing that.
Right. Come on, let's do our due diligence here. Yeah, I'm fairly certain it was 99 when, like, you know, the...
Yeah, let's see here. Yeah, 95 to 96 was original run, and then, blah, 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 blah. Well...
Was that 2000?
Let's see. Oh, Ian is saying 97.
I thought so, too, but I think it was actually probably closer to 2000.
Because I'm trying to think what was going on during that time. Like, okay, for instance, 95.
Because I was in middle school, so I know that much. And I was in middle school from 98 to 99.
And it came out when you were in middle school? Okay. Yeah, yeah, I'm not seeing it. 2000, yeah, Chill Spartan 187 is saying 2001, I think. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting how I'm looking on the wiki and... yeah, okay, well,
see, this is what we need AI for. So we just like, yeah, like chat GPT. Okay,
actually, that's what I need to do. When did Gundam Wing come out in the US? March 6, 2000.
There you go.
March 6, 2000. Okay. And then the show ran until May 11th, 2000, so that's pretty amazing. From March, April, May to be around at that time, I guess. Because, yeah, 2000, I was in high school at that time, and I think video games were just such the thing. I don't know anything on TV I was watching at that time. But, you know, again, I've talked about before, I kind of missed the train on anime when I was younger. I just saw Ninja Scroll. I thought that was badass, and I think that's about
that
it.
That is pretty badass. But
just thinking of where the world was in 95 when Wing came out, because I always think of the world as pre and post Jurassic Park. Hmm. Not that I like love that movie or anything, but I just love that it ushered in special effects.
It truly was a landmark of special effects. It's like if 77 Star Wars was like one big, like, we're going to do everything digitally, like we're digital editing, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, 95, was it 95 that Jurassic Park, or 93?
93. So I always think of things as pre and post Jurassic Park. So that was 93. So everything that comes out after 93, it makes me think, what, even if they still couldn't use CGI because it was expensive, what have they taken from that? The Godzilla movie sure did. Those later ones in the 90s. But
yeah, man.
I know at the time, like on TV, was Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Right. That 93, I think, was Power Rangers, and 94, 95. So yeah.
Which is fascinating, man. I just watched that that video that the Red and Black Ranger did. Like, it's Austin St. John, and
yeah,
I forget who the original Black Ranger was. They did that video talking about when they got hired as the Power Rangers. And of course they were like non-union teenager actors.
I know.
They got signed on for like 40 episodes and just completely got taken advantage of.
And they were smart about it, but it's just the other, because their kids didn't, you know, band together because they didn't know. It's hard.
Yeah. And what do you do at 17 years old and someone tells you, guess what? You are the number one television show in the world. Like, that is insane. That is an insane amount of pressure.
Yeah, you know, it is, but it is interesting to think, yeah, that was the Super Sentai finally coming to the U.S. in a way, and then there was that delay for Gundam, you know, to come to the U.S. So, again, it's so interesting how these things start in Japan, and it takes a while for the U.S. to catch on, you know, but when we do, we tend to embrace it.
Well, because Toonami on Cartoon Network, it started with, you know, they had two anime on there. It was Thundercats and Voltron. And I remember this because it was like every day I would come home from school and watch Thundercats and Voltron. My older brother was definitely more into Thundercats than I was. I wasn't as much into that as I was Voltron. Something about the giant robots, you know?
No, that's kind of neat because I watched Thundercats, you know, like in the 80s.
Yeah.
Or was this a different Thundercats? Or was it the
same one? Yeah, they just re-released it. Like, that was... And okay. This goes back to one of those things that you and I talk about all the time, is like, you know, with video game streaming and like, you know, because obviously people talk about like there's no money in creating new games for streaming platforms. And it's like, people forget that Netflix didn't always create new content. Like once upon a time, Netflix took old content and was just charging a subscription for it. And that's all Toonami did with like Thundercats and Voltron, is it's like, sometimes you have to take the old stuff, get people to buy in, and then you can start making enough money to put the new stuff out and it'd be profitable.
Yeah, it's interesting because that allows a generation potentially of new people to experience something that maybe that would have been forgotten. Because I love, like, Thundercats is an example of a show I was like, this animation is amazing. Why doesn't everything else look like this?
Right. You know, like, Bugs Bunny. I've never seen Bugs Bunny wave a sword around.
So I unfortunately don't have any interesting stories about Wing when I was younger because I didn't even know it existed, but
I got bullied for wearing a t-shirt with Zex on it. And they were like, oh, why are you wearing a t-shirt with a man with long hair? Like,
well, so yeah. So when you were in school, were you wearing Gundam shirts? And
yeah, I mean, I was all in on it. And
that's cool. Yeah. And would you also find people at school that were also into it? And
there were like two other guys that were like really heavy into Gundam, and we would kind of like swap stories and stuff like that. One of them was the one that was like really into the internet at that time. This was before I really got online. And so he had watched Char's Counterattack before I had gotten to see it. And, when we were talking about like our favorite mobile suits at one point, I was like, well, I really like, you know, the Goof flight type, like that's sweet. And he was like, you need to wait until you see Funnels from Char's Counterattack. That's where it's at. And I was like, I don't know what this guy's talking about.
That's amazing during that time. You know, when you hear things and you know, you can't really just look it up right then.
That was a wild time in the internet. I mean, I remember there was a, what was the website called? This was obviously the early days of the internet, and this guy had a website. I think it was like on Tripod or something, or GeoCity, one of those like type of hosting platforms. And it was just like a mecha, it was like a mecha wiki where he put like all of the line art from Gundam Wing and all the different Gundam series, all the Okawara drawings, and he would have like the technical specs and stuff like that. And one time when I took sprites from Gundam Battle Assault and like animated them into like a little like MS Paint drawing, and he published them on his site because he was like, oh, these are pretty sweet sprite drawings. Like,
that was a cool way to share things. It's not too dissimilar from now. It's just that whatever the technology prohibits, you know, that reminded me during that time, for me, one of the big things was, you know, Evil Dead. I was really into Evil Dead. And there was this site like Ode to Ash, and it was just this Evil Dead, Army of Darkness, Ash, you know, and it was just fun. And then, so I was like, well, I'm going to make my own Evil Dead website. And all I did was post picture. Like, I think the thing I love the most is I posted pictures from that. There was an episode of Reboot that had Ash in it. You know that CGI show Reboot?
Yeah. Dude, I loved Reboot, especially like the later seasons when Bob got like all long hair. And
that's right. Yeah. But they had an episode where there was Ash in the cabin and all that. And to me, it was wild discovering that on the internet and then finding the pictures somewhere. And then I posted them and made a website. And it's like, oh, look at that.
Dude, I made a website on GeoCities dedicated to Gundam Wing. I had created a play-by-post RPG.
Whoa.
Where it, like, you know, me and there was like maybe three or four other people, we would all like role play as Trace Kushranada and like and that stuff, and it was all play by post at the time. So clearly, like, Gundam and tabletop gaming is something that I've been into since I was like 14 years old.
That is really neat, because the play by post is one of those where someone would just post something and you would reply, but you would just be part of
you kind of like reply in character. And we had like dice rolls in, like, if there was any kind of combat going on.
Man, that is really cool. That's why I can't wait when this assemble or the card game comes out, or both, whatever. We could do this online or live or something, like, kind of bring that back. Yeah, but man, with the technology we have. But also, you were also getting the Gunpla at the time that it was released in the U.S.
Yeah, it was weeks of like, you know, I felt so bad for my dad because we would go to like Toys R Us and like all these different toy places. And my dad would be like, oh, do you guys carry Gungan models? And I was like, no, dad, not the Star Wars guys. I want Gundam. And like I said, I remember it so vividly going into that store, Another Universe at Fair Oaks Mall, right behind the Xenomorph's head on the left hand side of the store when you walked in. They only had two model kits in there. It was the Ultron, like from Endless Waltz, and the Death Scythe Hell from Endless Waltz, 1/100 scale. And I was like, I was huge into Wu Fei as a teenager, and I was like, I want Wu Fei's suit. Like, hell yes, this is.
And wait, so Another Universe, that used to be something around here too. Like, it was a big, electronic store, but also it had more stuff, like, and it was just huge, right?
Yeah, it was like kind of like a sci-fi anime chain where they would sell things. I remember that was my first exposure to Ghost in the Shell. Oh, maybe not.
The one where I was at was like, they changed the name of it. Oh, actually, that was called Incredible Universe. That was a big, but it had, you know, that type of stuff there. Exactly. But the Xenomorph head you saw, was it like something related to like the Resurrection movie, or
it was like one of the old school ones from Alien 3. It was like they had a Predator statue, like a life-size Predator in one window, and then a life-size Xenomorph in the other one. So,
oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's the place to hang out. I would be hanging out there if someone had a Xenomorph statue. Anyway, if anyone has a Xenomorph statue in front of their house, I'd probably go knock on the door.
I bet there's like, probably an old probably employee that took those home with them.
I know. Isn't that awesome? Oh, wait, that just reminded me. There's a house not too far from here down the street where they have a green alien in the front. It's odd. Not a xenomorph, but a gray, but it's
like green. A gray.
I don't get it. It doesn't really match, but okay. Anyway, so with the 30, let me pull this up. With this 30th, I don't know if you have heard anything interesting that's going to be going on. I found on Gundam Kits Collection, they've got this clear color, you know, high grade wing, which
it's always cool. Now it's clear. Yeah. When they've got a clear come out.
Just after that, the Master Grade SD, like when it's stuff that's non UC, when I see it in clear,
how do you feel about something like this? Because this is a high grade, right?
Yeah.
Because like,
well, you know what's interesting? I've actually built this twice.
Well, and now you have another one. Yeah.
Someone that doesn't care about. I have that one to build. Yeah. But this exact mold I've built twice because they done like the Build Fighters version or whatever. Yeah. And I love how it transforms. So really, oh man, but there's
clear parts cat. Don't. Oh, come on, man. They need you.
This is cat. Come on, cat. I'm trying to put on a show, and now there's a cat that needs a home. And when you press down, it doesn't go down.
Oh, no.
For those that are just listening, this is an ad about a cat that needs a home. Okay. Anyway, I cut you off.
No. I mean, like you said, it's always cool to see the clear kits when it's a master grade or a real grade, and you can see the internals. But like on a high grade, it kind of loses that appeal, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It does, but then you approach it the way Hatter would. You just light it up. LEDs. There's LED spots all over this thing.
Oh yeah.
It, you know what I mean?
Begs to be lit up.
Yeah, have that, that's actually maybe a good idea. Even with the rifle, like they have the clear part there. I mean, there's the wings. Yeah. That might be a fun little project. Because you actually sent me some LEDs.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Put them to use. It's interesting because for the 30th anniversary of Wing, obviously they're going to have some Gunpla that come out. You know, this would be one of them. I'm sure that they're going to have some other awesome, you know, heck, we might even get a Verka this year that's like, you know, Wing related.
Yeah. Okay, good point. Because we were trying to think of a Verka that might come out.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting is that we're not getting anything like, you know, we're not getting a new anime or a new, like, Even like an OVA or something like
related.
That. But Xenonic Scanlations is translating Frozen Teardrop, which I guess kind of counts as like us getting something.
The other story.
Yeah.
Well,
side story.
So that's a good question. You know, 30 years Wing. How do you, What do you think people associate Gundam with more, like the more mainstream broad? Is it UC, is it Wing, or is it Seed?
Man, it depends on who you ask. I think I saw on...
I feel like it's Wing.
Yeah, you think so? Because,
like, and it could just be the subliminal sort of being in my periphery, but when I was getting into Gundam, it's like Gundam Wing.
Yeah.
What's Gundam Wing? You know, and like that... And probably because I think that was really popular. And just like you and others, most people saw that in the
late 90s. Yeah, I mean, Nick, last night, we kind of bonded over that we both got into it around the same time when Wing aired in the U.S. Yeah. So, like I said, you're always going to get a different answer from people. And usually it depends on when they got into it, right? So, like, you know, guys like me and Nick, we're going to say, oh yeah, Wing is iconic because that's when it became big in the West. And then, you know, you look at a lot of a younger crowd, they're like, oh, well, it was Seed, obviously, because that's when I got into it in the West. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
it's very interesting just because I wonder if that hype is there for an additional animation, a movie, you know, I've gotten to the point now after watching Seed Freedom that even if I don't prefer that universe, I still totally enjoy watching Gundam animation. So, yeah. Like, if they were to come out with a Wing movie, I would go day one.
Yeah, and I feel like at this point, I would love to see a return to Wing because I feel like there's a lot left untold in the two, between Endless Waltz and the anime. There's a lot of, like... a lot of extra stories that can be told just using those characters, and maybe even toning down some of the campiness that I think most people are turned off by when it comes to Wing.
Yeah. Or maybe lean into it in a way where it's, you know, where you, it's almost like how C-3PO and RTD2 are the comic relief.
Yes.
You know, it's like you have to find that element you lean into and you don't let it kind of color the rest of the tone, because I think, you know, camp and cheese is good when it's used sparingly, or you can identify with how it's being used.
As long as it's like self-aware, right?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I'm interested to see, and I think you nailed it, a Master Grade Verka. That, you know, each year we've been getting some new cool ones. I wonder, yeah, if it's going to be some Wing stuff. Is there anything you would say is missing? And because I don't know much of what's been released Verka Wing wise.
Dude, we've had way too many Wing Gundams, so it probably would not be a Wing. Okay. You know, would it be maybe another Tall Geese? Because I think there's already a Tall Geese in the Tall Geese 3, but maybe a Tall Geese 2. Did they Epion? Do an Epion? Yeah, I don't know.
That's I don't know.
Good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me. But I think that even just some of the side suits, like a Death Scythe Hell.
Oh yeah, that's. Let's see. It doesn't. No. There's a Master Grade, but not a Verka.
Yeah. So there you go.
So you know that's a pretty good idea, and you know the Gundam Universe figures.
Right.
That are coming out are Wing related, and I just didn't really put make all that together. So they really have some stuff planned. That's cool. Okay, we're gonna get into this last topic here, and you know, Steve and I were talking before the show. It's like this could be spoilery, but by now, like I think I'm gonna be spoiled by something. In fact, I was when I read this article.
really,
but you know, it's and what we're gonna talk about is the most tragic deaths, the top 10 tragic deaths in Gundam. Now, this is going to be sad, and we're going to do this, the fun rating system where we're going to give our own ranking as we go down.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Get your tissues ready.
Yeah. Let's do this. Okay. I got a good idea. And this might be, you know, calling you at the last minute, but are you able, you know what? These ads annoy me. I'm going to try to hide. Okay. What would you consider the most tragic death in Gundam? Are you able to pull that out right now?
Well, I made a video about it. Would be Camille's mother getting killed right in front of his face. Like,
dude, you stole mine.
Oh,
and
really?
I just thought you made the video about that. Yeah. But, dude, the sense of dread just for storytelling I felt.
Yeah.
Like in space, there's so much about it. How scared she would be right before, not even knowing what's going on or what's going to happen.
And then the powerlessness he felt, like, you know, there's so many aspects of it that are tragic. And even in that moment, Jared doesn't know what he's doing. And he even says, like, oh, I feel uneasy. Like, what happened? Like, you know, he kind of gets that sense of like, oh, I wasn't supposed to do that.
Yeah, that it's interesting for that to be written for the character to react to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not something that we'd normally see written. And that's good.
We always talk about that. Like animation is so deliberate. Like they have to make those choices that, you know,
it's
not something that you can just ad lib.
And it goes into, again, the characterization. You know, okay. So Lala Soon. When we think why that's tragic, I think it's very tragic because this was that sort of pivotal moment, I think, in Universal Century anyway. I mean, not only dealing with Principal of Zeon and the Federation, but also new types, because even though Amuro was a new type, he was kind of fighting for all of humanity. And for Lala, it's like, I wish I met you earlier, that line, you know, and it's so like, haunting. Crap. Yeah. Because they kind of explain, like they make it. I know a lot of people talk about sometimes, especially with Requiem for Vengeance, like, oh, the Principal of Zeon are the bad guys. Why are we rooting for the bad guys? And it's like, no, it's so much more complex than that. And Lala Soon is a good example of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about like, it's just where you're raised, where you're growing up, who the people are around you. And if you're being treated well, and if propaganda is framed in a certain way, I mean, we've all in the past 10 years have all been tricked by propaganda that's been going on. I think that's a tragic death because she was caught up in that. And meeting Amuro, she realized, wait a minute, he's a really good man, almost maybe a better purpose, but this man Char has been a good son to me, you know,
and rescued her from like a life of, you know, poverty. And, you know, how do you turn your back on that? You know, there's an aspect of loyalty, and what's the old phrase is dance with the girl who brought you. You know, she went from being this, you know, war orphan living in an impoverished country to all of a sudden being, you know, being a major part of the military and you know, having a life. And she owed a lot of that to Char. So it's hard to then turn your back on him and say, like, hey, I'm going to work with the guy that's trying to kill you now.
And so I would say, and maybe I'll change my mind, but I would say this would be number one tragic death just because of the ramifications it had on the Universal Century. Again, yeah, not just Federation and Principal of Zeon, but new types. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And her personal story. Like
the thing that Amuro said, where after he kills her, he says, I've done something I can't take back. There's something in that line too, where it's like, I've changed the course of history by doing like,
Oh, and I wonder if that's going to be explored in GQuax. You know,
good point.
Like, yeah. That whole alternate history. So, all right, moving down, Trey's Kushinada. Is that your number one?
Obviously. I mean, that's.
Yeah, I'd have to watch it again to really connect.
Trey's didn't win, right? Like, at the end of the day, Trey's was correct. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, you do say that off. And I think they do a good job with that in this, actually.
There's a lot of confusion about that. And I think a lot of that comes to, like, in Gundam Wing, you're not quite sure who the bad guy is.
Yeah, especially like when Hero acts like a jerk, you know.
Right.
So
at the end of the day, everyone kind of has valid points, and I think that Trey's has a very humanist approach, like the fact that he doesn't want the battlefield to be populated by robots that are unfeeling and unthinking, and, you know, war becomes a game of, you know, there's no sacrifice, there's no honor involved with it, and so therefore it becomes meaningless. So there's a there's something to that.
Yeah, dignified warrior. Yeah, that they're calling dignified warrior. Okay, Laughter Franklin. So this was, you know, a bright character that I
have made it that far in.
Not this far. So this is a spoiler, but I'm not, light turned off, but I'm not too shocked by that. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know the context around it exactly, but we'll, I guess I'll find out soon. Cause yeah, I'm on like episode 10 or something. I've been taking it slow. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. This is if Lala's number one, this has got to be number two, right?
Exactly. Because this has nothing to do with the war, the outcome of the war. That's what's very interesting about this. Just like it says War in the Pocket, it's a very personal story. It has nothing to do with the outcome of the war. This is people caught up in the war, though, and what led to this. But because they didn't know each other was doing what they were doing, they were just fighting to fight. Like, if they had known who they were, that wouldn't have happened. Still wouldn't have made a change to the Universal Century. That's why I find this a very interesting.
I mean, it's a Gundam O. Henry story, you know? I sold my watch in order to buy you a new brush. And it's like, I cut my hair in order to buy you a new watch chain. Like, oh.
No. Yeah, that's why this is tragic. Yeah. Different than the Lala thing. It has its own tragedy to it. Marita Cruz. Yeah. Mm. That's the number three. Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. But it's just her impact in a way of how she's been involved in Universal Century.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's definitely there's a lot of fan attachment to Merida as a character. I never felt that, but you know, I definitely think that she was what's that?
Well, I was going to say, for me, it was the whole, like, what her history is.
Yeah. Compared she had a to very tragic life.
Piloting the Kshatriya and then her being that character that we would kind of know, you know, from before, but being completely different, almost like a trained killer, badass. Like when they were chasing Banaja, like I like that whole thing and the complex character, because then when she's confronted or faced with the choices she's making, it's like you can see she leans good. It's just what she's caught up in or being brainwashed to do, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Stella Lucier and was this Shin's first girlfriend?
Yeah. So this
the
is
the one that was
former Asume, but
okay. Oh, okay. And where, if I'm not mistaken, like she had some sort of mental instability that was going on that kind of led to.
Yeah. She was like a cyber new type, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. I can't believe I remembered that. See, that's how good Destiny is.
Yeah, see, I mean, you guys need to stop hating on Destiny.
Okay, here we go. Sergei Smirnov, Gundam 00. I really like that, but I can't say I remember this dude at all. At least not by name, even though I think 00 is great.
Yeah, I never finished 00, so I can't.
And you need to.
I need to get a shot.
That way we can. I need to finish Iron Blooded Orphans. You need to watch 00.
All right, fair. We'll you heard it here, folks.
We'll make that a promise to each other. Yeah, that sometime we will finish those. Okay. Okay, Lock on Stratos. So this is, if I'm remembering this correctly, I don't want to be wrong. Because in 00, there's this guy that dies, and then he has a twin brother that takes his place.
Oh, my gosh. What is this? Days of Our Lives.
It's so weird because that is like completely writing a character back in.
Oh, yeah. Like soap opera.
It's crazy. Okay. Oh, Shino's final gamble in Iron Blooded Orphans. Haven't seen that yet. I'm sure that's tragic. The way that
looks pretty bad.
But do you remember that?
Yeah, Space Guts gives it his all.
Oh, okay, Space Guts. I like that. Okay. Nicole and Tole were casualties of a fight not their own in Gundam Seed. I guess from the original Gundam Seed, because I do not remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, that was the number one. That was the number one.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Well, on that note,
I can't even accuse this of being written by AI because it's not. It's because it's that bad.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it had a Bernie on there. It didn't have Camille's mom because Camille's mom is. That's so funny you made that video because earlier today when I was thinking what is a good one to bring up, it was Camille's mom.
You yeah, see, and no mention of four, no mention of like Captain Hinkin.
Oh, like Chan, Aggie. Chan, right? Isn't Aggie, her name?
From Char's Counter.
Amro's girlfriend from that one was horrible.
No mention of Matilda.
Oh yeah. What was another one?
I mean, you could probably populate a list of top 20 just from UC series.
I know. Yeah, exactly. I know we're lucky that it's the end of the stream because we could just be talking about death for a while. So
yeah. Oof.
Stop. But no. So that's it. You know, that was it for this episode of the Gundam Explained Show Live. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for all in the chat. Yeah, it was fun kind of thinking, you know, with the 30th anniversary of Wing, like what more could they be releasing? I'm kind of curious about that.
For sure, man.
But also, yeah, don't forget to comment on the video that I got up about the Zaku to get the giveaway I'm doing. And then I'm going to be doing my Q&A videos soon. So there is time. If you haven't sent me a question, you can either do it on Discord. Where did I post it? Yeah, it was a YouTube post, and it's on Twitter, where you just ask me anything. Lore about technology with YouTubing, anything.
Yeah, man,
you
know, congratulations on 10K. That is such a massive achievement.
Thank you. I feel so... I don't know how to explain it. Like... when I'm making a video, I am just so pumped vindicated. While I'm making it.
Like,
yeah, well, even if it's like, the go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, just the value that you're providing people with the things that you're commenting on. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Cause I tell you, when I'm making the video, like even with all the boring editing I have to do, sometimes it's like, but you know what? This is going to be so cool when I release it.
Exactly. Yeah,
it feels good. So more to come there. Anyway, all, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Have a good weekend.